Welcome to the DermVet Podcast. I'm Dr. Ashley Bourgeois, a board-certified veterinary dermatologist practicing in Portland, Oregon with animal dermatology clinics. I'm also a mom of two, just trying to find the balance like everyone else. Let's learn to ditch the itch, cytology, everything, and make derm more fun than frustrating. Okay, let's wrap up our series on spiels, allergy spiels. So we have gone over the flea talk, the food talk, and now we have come to the conclusion the pet has atopic dermatitis. If you're talking about dogs or cats, we call it feline atopic skin syndrome because cats are their own entity. They kind of behave differently with their allergies. So the name changes a lot, but currently the running diagnosis is feline atopic skin syndrome. So a bit of a mouthful. So how do we explain this to owners? So when I start, you know, we've kind of gone over three different, the main types of allergies we see, right? Flea allergy, food allergy, and environmental allergies. When I'm just meeting an owner for the first time and say, I don't have a clear idea what's going on, or I think there's a possibility of all of these, you know, we'll give little snippets of this to some degree in one conversation. So when I first start talking about flea and food and why it's important to rule those out, what I always tell owners is it can take a bit of time, as we've learned the last couple of weeks, to rule flea or food out. But in the, you know, span of a pet's life, to take a couple of months to rule these easier things out, we are going to be better off for it. So to make sure we have the flea control set, that we've ruled out the possibility of food, that those things take time. In the life of that pet, we're going to struggle less if they truly are there and we control them versus just jumping onto something like environmental allergies. Now, statistically, depending on where you live, because geography can play a big role in this, atopic dermatitis is often the most common thing we see as far as allergies, especially in dogs. Flea allergy, depending on where you live, between cats and dogs can be more common. But we do see atopy, atopic dermatitis, feline atopic skin syndrome more often than we do see food. But remember, there is a substantial amount of dogs who have a food allergy that also have atopic dermatitis. So that's why it's still important to do things like food trials unless you strictly have a seasonal dog. We want to rule out the possibility. What I tell owners too is we want to control the controllable. We cannot control the environment for the most part. Of course, there's little things we can do, HEPA filters, moving locations, but wiping them, things like that. But for the most part, we can't truly control the environment. But we can control parasites, and to a degree, depending on what the dog gets into, or cat, we can control the food. But we can't control the environment. So that's why I say we take the time to rule out the controllable things, control the controllable, rule out the things that can mask and look like atopic dermatitis. But we've done those things now, and now we know this pet has atopic dermatitis. How do we explain this to owners? So I really like to go back to what do we think about as people? And I know I've kind of said this each week, but I just think owners understand it better because a lot of these are common things we see in people as far as analogies that we can compare to. So my husband can have allergies in the spring. I don't really tend to struggle with allergies. So I explain it very similar to people. If you know someone who has allergies, it is your body overreacting to something in the environment. So we hit springtime, my husband starts getting congested, stuffy nose, you know, sneezing, coughing, and I'm sitting there totally fine. Our bodies are experiencing the same pollens. We live in the same house. We're getting exposure to the same things, but his body is overreacting or having a different response compared to my body. Now, as humans, we tend to have more of those respiratory signs, the itchy eyes, conjunctivitis, things like that. And dogs and cats like to show us their allergies through their skin and their ears. You know, then occasionally you get cats with asthma, things like that. But for the most part, they show us their environmental allergies through their skin and their ears. And why do I kick that off when I'm talking to owners? Because again, it kind of explains to them. A lot of people say, well, how come I have two dogs and one's itchy and one's not? So just getting back to the standpoint of it's nothing to do with, you know, improper things in your environment or the fabric softener or other things that owners really want it to be, because again, they can control it. It is just an overreaction of the immune system based on lots of things, genetics, environments, hygiene hypothesis, so many different things that feed into this. So it's just the body's overreaction to it. And so then I go to explain most of these pets are itchy. So let's just stick with dogs because that's a little bit easier because there are some differences, obviously, between dogs and cats. So let's say we have a dog. We've ruled out food. We've ruled out flea. And we're getting to the diagnosis of atopic dermatitis. I explained to them overreaction of the immune system, very similar to people, just depends on what your body reacts to. So then I kind of split it into a couple different categories of what we need to consider. Say they're itchy because most dogs are. So I say there's two different things in my mind that causes itch in these dogs. You know, one, the allergy itself, the primary allergy, the genetic defect that your body overreacts and it causes them to be itchy. Two, infection. And why do I explain both of those things? Because infections are a part of all of these allergies. And it's really confusing for owners to understand why we're always collecting cytology or, you know, if they're doing great on a medication like Apoquel and all of a sudden they flare, that it's not just because Apoquel is not working anymore. It's just because, you know, if flares happen and there's a little bit of yeast because we moved into spring and now they're just having a little bit of a breakthrough in their itch. It's hard for owners to understand that. So I like to explain to them what makes your pet itchy, the allergy, the infection. So we got to make sure we rule out things like yeast and bacteria. That's why we'll collect cytologies often because that can change and we don't want to give up on certain medications if there's an infection that could be complicating things. But then there is truly the primary itch. It also kind of helps owners to understand why they may go home on multiple things like topical therapy, you know, anti-itch therapy, because there's two different things that are really causing itch. Allergy, infection. So the allergy portion, we're going to need something that provides comfort. So in dogs, we're going to primarily think of things like Apoquel, Cytopoint, depending on their situation, maybe cyclosporin or steroids. Cats primarily is going to be steroid cyclosporin. Then there's some off-label things that we can consider as well. And we're all assuming that they're on good flea control and we've done the food talk at this point. So we talk about, okay, the itch, primary allergy, infection, we control that. So your pet is comfortable, the quality of life is good, you're able to sleep, and that we are really controlling those symptoms. Then there is the option for us to consider kind of that long-term plan, that marathon thinking is what I'll kind of tell owners. That is the potential to desensitize through allergy testing. And there's different podcast episodes. I've really dived into allergy testing. I'm going to do some more next year as well. So we're not going to go into the logistics of skin versus serum, subcutaneous versus sublingual. You know, there's really room in my mind. There's really room for all of those depending on the situation, which we'll talk more about next year. But I just bring up the option for desensitization. And the idea I tell them behind that is, remember, allergy testing is not a diagnostic test. If we're performing allergy testing on a dog or a cat, we know they have environmental allergies. We are doing the test knowing they have environmental allergies because the owner has elected to do immunotherapy. I don't allergy test if they don't do immunotherapy. It's a lot of money to not really be helpful for us, and allergies are already expensive enough. So we've already know the pet's allergic. If you allergy test a normal cat or dog, you're probably going to get some positives. It doesn't matter if it's not clinically causing them issues. We are doing it because we know they have environmental allergies and we're going to do immunotherapy. So the way I explain it to them is we can use things like symptom therapy, and that's something that we really need to do. But especially if we have a younger pet, if we want the opportunity to be less dependent on medication, desensitize them, stop the pathogenesis of the disease, because we know as cats and dogs get older, their allergic symptoms tend to progress and get worse. So if we want to help prevent that, then allergy therapy, immunotherapy is really the only way we have to do that. And so we essentially find out what they're allergic to. We put that in a bottle, for lack of a better term, and then we give it to them in small controlled amounts, trying to teach our immune system to not be so reactive to these things. That's not the right decision for every owner. Some people, the thought of allergy testing and putting all this time, money, and effort into something for up to a year and not knowing if it'll work or not is too much for them. And a lot of times, even if they're successful on immunotherapy, we still do need some of the symptom therapies. Maybe we just don't get infected as often. Maybe we don't need as much Cytopoint. Like we used to need it every month. Now we just need it in the spring, things like that. but it's really owner dependent. So that's kind of how I explain it, is the body's overreacting to things in the environment. We need things like symptom therapy for your pet to feel comfortable. They're going to be quick, really highly efficacious. And then we have to control things like infection. Then long term, we can consider doing something like desensitization, which is essentially working with the immune system to teach it to not be so overreactive to these things. A lot of times you'll see studies report about a 70% success rate. That doesn't mean they're on nothing else. There's all these different reasons that immunotherapy can be helpful. If within 12 to 18 months, we're sitting here and we can tell that there has been benefit, whether it's less infections, less severe infections, less medication, less symptoms. If we sit here and say, yes, it's definitely been helpful for us, then it is something that most pets stay on lifelong. So that's another important thing for owners to realize. It's a lifelong disease, management, not perfection. We're just trying to control things long term. And that's really important for owners to recognize. Cure is not really going to be an option in these pets, dogs or cats. Management is our option. And then I also go into talking about multimodal therapy. And sometimes this is broken into different conversations because it can be very overwhelming for owners depending on what's been done with them before they've seen us as specialists. But when we talk about things like the importance of bathing, the importance of topical therapy, I really discuss the fact that exposure to these pollens or dust mites or danders are absorbed cutaneously. That's why we really see in these pets them being itchy, licking, chewing, becoming inflamed. So things like bathing, helping to remove pollens from the skin, remove dandruff from the skin, remove scale, remove debris, you know, using things that are medicated if there's signs of infection can be really helpful. Just from the standpoint of not absorbing those things and triggering that immune system. Remember, there's the inside-outside theory where the inside of your body is reacting to the outside, but there's the outside-inside theory where there's a skin defect allowing these things to penetrate more easily. And then that really catapults the immune system. So both of those theories are actually very true, and that's why we have multimodal therapy. So when I start talking about the importance of topicals and bathing, I explain that the mechanical removal of those danders will lessen the absorption. So hopefully we're not triggering the immune system as much. That's why maintenance bathing is really important. That's why wiping the paws when they're outside, you know, 99% of dogs walking around without shoes on, right? So they're going to pick up these things. So using the wipes so we can wipe their feet, not only if they're prone to infection, but also just remove those pollens from their skin so they're not absorbing them as much can be extremely important. So in a nutshell, that's kind of what I break into. And like I said, you got to really be careful how much you overload an owner with information. Some people have experience. They've had another allergic dog. They can have all three of these spiels at the same time. They're in. They're good. Some people, you really, really have to separate it. And there's no right or wrong. We're all different in how we learn, how we absorb information. And it's very overwhelming for owners to have a young dog, a young cat, and all of a sudden realize that they are set up with some sort of lifelong disease, even if it doesn't seem like it should be that big of a deal because it's not deadly. It is frustrating. It is something they weren't expecting. You know, they didn't think they're going to have to pay for medication every single month the rest of this young pet's life. They didn't think they're going to have to invest in something like allergy testing. So it is really important through all of this, all of these spiels, to be very empathetic with the owner, because allergies are very frustrating. They can get pretty nasty. The infections get pretty nasty. So that's why we want to be proactive and not be afraid of these spiels, not be afraid of having handouts if you don't have time to really go into it during your exam, having resources for owners so they can really educate themselves and have appropriate expectations. So I hope that really kind of helps how I paint the picture for owners. And sometimes I have to repeat myself, right? Every few rechecks, we're kind of having the same conversation because it's really overwhelming for people and it's easy for them to zone out or not remember what was said. I mean, I do that with my own kids at their doctor's appointments, right? Like, oh, the doctor said something about this, but I'm not sure. We're all human. It's a lot of information to take in. So that's why having the resources, the handouts, websites that owners can refer back to can save you time and be really helpful. So I hope this journey through these different types of allergies and how we really discuss them with owners, you found some value in. Next week is going to be our year-end wrap-up, which I'm really excited about. If you go to my social media, I have some opportunities for you to kind of put in what you learned from the podcast this year, as we've turned three, which is crazy to think about. What's been helpful? What have you learned? What are you excited about? Feel free to message me. And I just cannot wait to bring you more content next year. And with everything that's going on with my son and our family this year, I appreciate your patience. I can't wait to dive back into interviews and other people being on the podcast, because that's one of my favorite things to do. And here's to 2023 being an amazing year. But don't forget, we still get one more 2022 podcast episode next week.